Good morning. Maui's compelling attraction for visitors is often at odds with the beauty and lifestyle they come to experience. Albert Perez, the executive director of Maui Tomorrow Foundation, considers the impact now and later on the environment. And wrapping up our look on the many changes on the Valley Island, we'll talk with a man who has made Maui home for 49 years. Dick Mayer has the final word later in the show. I'm Beth Ann Koslovich.
And I'm Chris Vandercook. Santana bassist and musical director Benny Rietveld's new concert centers around a theme of letting go. He's here with special guest Allison Yaffe. And Luhue's Happiness Planting Center brings together all things Japanese in its upcoming Bridge of Peace Festival.
It's the conversation for this Kamehameha Day, Friday, June 10th, and it starts after this news. Good morning and welcome to the conversation on this Friday, Kamehameha Day. Maybe you've got the day off. Glad we can spend some time together. And good morning to you, Chris.
Good morning, Beth Ann. You've been looking at Maui all week, and this morning you're looking at the thing on which everything hinges on Maui, namely the environment, right?
This is true. It's exactly what people have been coming to Maui to enjoy, whether they're staying there permanently as new residents or whether they're simply spending a vacation. But as we've been looking this week at how Maui is being remodeled by its ever-growing and often transplanted population and the visitor industry, the claims of each on land and infrastructure can be lengthy. The natural tension between offering what many residents and visitors want and conserving the place they enjoy particularly shows up in the environment, as Chris mentioned. And for almost 20 years now, Maui Tomorrow Foundation has worked in partnership with other community organizations to focus on quality of life. In March, the group published a report on Maui's farming future on the heels of the announced closure of HCNS and the end of sugar. Albert Perez is the executive director of Maui Tomorrow Foundation, and he's on the line now. Good morning.
Good morning, Beth Ann.
Thanks for being with us today, especially on a holiday. As you look at Maui in general, what are the most pressing concerns that you see, and how would you rate Maui's environmental health right now?
Well, you know, for a long time, we've been able to say that it's been pretty good. But in the last decade or so, I would say that we're starting to see some of the same problems. Reef degradation, a lot of traffic, the same problems as Oahu has been having for a long time. So, but water, the future of the Central Maui lands with HCNS closing, traffic, population, tourism, lots of questions. Air quality has been an issue. We're pretty close to the Big Island, so we have VOG, but also the cane burning is supposed to end at the end of this year. So hopefully there will be some improvement. Of course, that depends on whether the new landowners start burning new crops, but we are hopeful.
You've also put out in the report that came out in March some possible solutions that you thought would put Maui on the map, quote, as a leader in a systemic and holistic approach to agriculture. What specifically would you like to see happen with those lands that may be a little different from what people may be considering?
Well, yeah, I'm glad you brought that up. You know, Alexander and Baldwin is the owner of the lands. They talked about wanting to do diversified agriculture. We have seen across the state that diversified agriculture is a very difficult thing to be successful at. And so we have been talking with some people who are experts of what we call regenerative agriculture. And we think that this has a better chance to be profitable and therefore for the land to remain in agriculture. So specifically, regenerative agriculture concentrates on building the soil instead of extracting all of the nutrients from it. And with better soil health, you have increased organic content, less water usage. You have multiple income streams from the same property. You might have as many as six things going on that all generate income. And they also, one process can take the waste stream from another and use it as an input for fertilizer, for example.
I understand you just said about the fertilizer. That was sort of where maybe naturally a lot of people's thoughts went. But when you talk about having up to six and also being able to rebuild the soil, specifically how do you rebuild the soil in that way, and what might be some other examples of income streams that the very same land would be producing?
Well, of course, it depends on what you start with. But let's say that you're starting on some former cane lands that have been they've been using chemical fertilizers mostly. They burn off the crop, and so there's not a lot of organic matter being returned to the soil. There's some, but the first thing you would do would be plant some cover crops to build the nitrogen, build the organic content. You could run cattle on the grass there. You could run sheep. You could have chickens come through, and they would leave their fertilizer behind. And over time, you would build the organic content in the soil.
And that would be okay with the Department of Health about having chickens running around, too?
Well, I don't see why not. It happens all the time.
When you look at farming, per se, and what might happen there, that's a big part of how you look at the future. But a lot of that depends on water, too. The A and B lands already have an irrigation infrastructure. But what about the rest of the island as you see that conflict between development and conservation still playing out with what other people want from other parts of the island?
Well, I think that there is a competition for water between agriculture and urbanization. So I think that's what we're looking at as a choice. And in a lot of cases, the water is essential to the urbanization. And it's a little bit tricky because keeping the land in agriculture, you need water to do that. But then if that's available for agriculture, then it's also available for urbanization. So it really depends on the planning process to see what's going to happen.
And what about the pressure of the visitor industry? Now that Maui has record numbers, a lot of people would like to see that continue and grow.
Well, in my personal opinion, we need to look at the carrying capacity of our infrastructure and of our environment. And at the current time, we have clearly exceeded the current carrying capacity both of our wastewater systems and our transportation. So, for example, we have injection wells that inject the partially treated effluent into the ground at Lahaina, in the Lahaina area. And if you go offshore, there's been so much nutrient loading that there's a lot of algae growing. There was a boatload of decision makers that went out into the water the other day, and from my discussions with some of those people, they could see the effluent bubbling up from just a few feet offshore and hardly any fish life. So, and at the same time, we're still having additional projects going in before that's settled. The county is spending millions of dollars appealing the lawsuit that was filed that they lost instead of taking the money and fixing the problem. In Kihei, South Maui, the problem is reported to be four times worse. And that's not even being addressed. So,
well, I'll tell you what.
We need to solve that problem before we start adding additional wastewater load.
For the moment, we have to say goodbye, only in the interest of time. But we'll take this up again with you sometime in the future. Thanks very much for joining us this morning.
Oh, thank you, Beth. Aloha.
Aloha. Albert Perez is the executive director of the Maui Tomorrow Foundation. This is the conversation on statewide member-supported HBR2. It's now 8:14 exactly. Coming up, chasing the freedom that comes from letting go. But first, here's your backyard quiz.
All this week we've been talking about issues affecting Maui, and no Maui discussion would be complete without talking about sugar. The sugar industry was once strong in Hawaii, but steadily declined for decades. The last operational plantation and mill in Hawaii is set to close. That plantation is Hawaii Commercial and Sugar, operated by Alexander and Baldwin. Over time, HC&S acquired many neighboring plantations, eventually becoming the largest producer of sugar in the United States. This didn't happen without some serious planning and infrastructure development. Exact estimates vary, but it takes thousands of gallons of water to produce a single 5-pound bag of sugar. That can be a challenge on Maui, where optimal farmland is not located near an easy supply of fresh water. Alexander and Baldwin had to overcome this irrigation challenge to build its sugar empire. So for today's backyard quiz, we wanted to know the name of the irrigation system the company built to water its crop. Call 941-3689 or 877-941-3689 if you know the answer. The first one to get it right gets the T-shirt.
Good morning. I'm Kalei Stern from the Omidyar Fellows Program. You're listening to The Conversation on HPR2, member-supported Hawaii Public Radio.
You have to surrender a part of yourself in order to free yourself, and that's not always easy. It's our nature to hang on to the things we've acquired, the things that matter to us, the things we're attached to, and that need to hang on can imprison us. Musician Benny Rietveld has made the art of letting go the theme of his concert tomorrow evening at the Honolulu Museum of Art's Doris Duke Theater because, as he says, when we let go of everything, we gain everything. Benny and Allison Yaffe, his special guest for the concert, are with us in our studio. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning.
Thanks for coming in. You sound a little haunted this morning.
No. No, I just like the sound.
Well,
I was just watching The Dark Knight, you know.
It sounded great, and you got that voice down.
Thank you.
I like the idea of a concert with a theme, and what made you come up with this one?
Lots of events in life had kind of just pointed, you know, to that. You know, people passing, you know, really good friends, Jimmy Borges, you know, things like that. So
life forces us to deal with.
Yeah, and it forces us to drop things that are weighing us down all the time. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we're imprisoned by, you know, our notions and our belief systems and you know, things, our fears and things we hang on to, you know. So,
but, you know, the notion of letting go, of surrendering in order to be free, is sort of counterintuitive in some ways. I mean,
yeah, we're not taught that. You know?
Yeah.
And nobody teaches us that. And
I'm not sure we're even wired for it, Benny.
I don't know. I think we are. It's just that it's not accessed. You know?
Yeah.
I think that's what, I mean, I hate to say it, but I think, I don't want to sound like some advocate, but that's kind of partially what the LSD experiments were about in the 60s, you know, like accessing different parts, you know.
Yeah.
Of our potential, you know.
Because there was a prevailing thing in that era that there's got to be more than this.
Yeah, and there is. I just think that. And now I think we're kind of backsliding a little bit with a lot of social media and things like that where it's supposed to be connecting us, but it's actually disconnecting us in some ways.
Oh, you bet. Yeah.
You know what I mean? So it's like ironic, and I think we're not able to access that, you know, kind of freedom part, because we're so, you know, like attached to all this, you know, the things that people think of us and, you know, what I think about this and what you think about that. And, you know, it's like really a little bit too much, I think. So,
yeah, Benny, I was just in New York for a couple of weeks watching everybody walk around, stare at their iPhones. And I really thought human interaction is in trouble.
It's true. And so we have to let go of those things sometimes, you know, just all that dependency and you know, on our dependency on not just technological things, but personal things. And, you know, we are attached to our fears, and we're attached to our things that are that we hate and our anger, you know.
Yeah.
And it's like really, you know, and for, you know, it's a struggle for me, you know. I'm always, you know, trying to drop stuff that's weighing me down, you know.
Yeah.
It was just really difficult.
Well, like anger is a good example, Benny, because it hooks you in. It doesn't let you go, right?
Yeah.
You feel anger.
Yeah.
You feel, you know, any kind of negative emotion, and you are in a kind of prison.
And it becomes a drug, you know, and it's not, you know, good. And nobody tells us that because, you know, we're all like checking our statuses.
Yeah, right.
Hey, you know, I'm doing this now, you know.
Well, your task is to sort of translate that message into music.
Yes.
That gets a little tricky, doesn't it?
No, yeah. I mean, sort of. But music is actually a really powerful force. I mean, it can really, it's the probably the most powerful force, because it's really, it's invisible. It's like, it works on your subconscious level, and it can be in the background, it's in the foreground, and, you know, people are affected, you know.
Sure.
We were just at a breakfast place called Heavenly. And the food was great, and everything was fantastic. And then they had this really awful music going on. I was this doesn't make sense. It actually made us feel bad. You know? I'm like, oh, this doesn't match.
Bad music could mess with your digestion, no doubt.
Yeah. So that's music. I always say music's my weapon. So hopefully, you know.
Well, let's deploy some.
Yeah.
You and Allison are here. Allison with her guitar, and you're going to play. The song is just as the title is just as beautiful as the song.
Exactly.
Softly as in a morning sunrise.
Well, thank you for that intro.
That was beautiful. Thank you so much. Benny Riedfeld and Allison Yaffe.
You're welcome.
Benny Riedfeld is a bassist and a musical director for Carlos Santana. He's back home for his fourth annual show at the Holman Museum of Art's Doris Duke Theater. Tomorrow evening, he'll be joined on stage by Reggie Padilla, Eldred Alo, Travis O, Tim Sukiyama, and Noel Okimoto. Allison Yaffe will play guitar and sing. Thanks very much for coming in. That sounded great.
Thank you.
How do you take a picture of a black hole? Simple. Use a telescope as big as the Earth. I'm Ira Flatow. Join me on Science Friday for a look at the clever ways astrophysicists are investigating these enigmas of the universe. Plus, there's talk about closing the iconic radio telescope at Arecibo. Is it an aging relic or a vital link to the cosmos? The answers on Science Friday from PRI.
This morning from 9 to 11, right after The Conversation.
The next time you're on the road, check out the license plate frames of the vehicles around you. Can you spot one of Hawaii Public Radio's more than 4,000 sustaining members? We send a big mahalo to these supporters whose monthly contributions provide the station with a source of reliable income. Robert Landau of Honolulu, Sherry Clark of Kailua, and Maggie and Nick Alves of Kula. If you'd like to help us steer a stable course into the future, we'd welcome your sustained support at hawaiipublicradio.org, or you can give us a call to find out more at 955-8821 during regular business hours. Now, after 3 years of trying to get disciplinary records of Honolulu police officers suspended for misconduct, Civil Beat now has a decision from the Hawaii Supreme Court. And now Honolulu police officers know that they don't have an absolute right of confidentiality. Civil Beat Managing Editor Bob Ortega joins us now for a reality check. Good morning.
Good morning, Beth Ann.
Was this a very clear decision that weighed solely in favor of Civil Beat?
Well, I wish I could say that, but no. It's a mixed decision. I think the key point here is that the police union had been arguing that there is an absolute right of confidentiality, that police disciplinary records simply should not be released, period. And very clearly the judges in this case have said, no, that is not the case. We had argued that they should be releasable because, after all, these are records that show what an officer is doing in the course of his or her duties, and therefore that's of public interest. What the court wound up ruling was that the privacy interests of, it said that the officers do have certain privacy interests, and that in any individual case, the lower court should weigh those privacy interests against the interests of the public in knowing that, in knowing what's going on. In the opinion that was written by the Hawaii Supreme Court Justice Mark Reichenwald, he said basically that because police officers are entrusted with the right to use force, even deadly force, and because that right can be subject to abuse, public oversight is really important, that minimizes the possibility of abuse because it ensures the police departments and officers are held accountable for their actions. And that's a really important public interest.
You're talking about no absolutes, but judging this on a case-by-case basis. So as we look at what may happen in the next legislative session and what may happen with police reform, does this bode well for that?
I think so, yes. You know, the judges were very clear in saying that there's certain types of information, for example, officers' home addresses or their social security numbers or their bank account information, that should be kept private. And I think everybody would agree that's the case. I mean, there would be no reason for either the news media or the public to know an officer's bank account information, for example. Mm-hmm. But I think it is, it's very clear that if you say that in principle, disciplinary records should be released because that helps keep the officers themselves and the departments accountable, and that public oversight in and of itself is important, especially when misconduct is egregious, that's a really key point. And I think that's something that we're going to see now in the wake of this ruling, hopefully result that this ruling will result in legislative action to sort of clarify that.
Really quickly, Bob, because we got to go in just a second. So does this mean now that all those records that you were trying to get, you now have or will have soon?
No, it goes back to the lower court, and they'll make individual ruling, I'd say, probably within the next few months.
All right. Well, we'll see what happens then. And thanks very much for joining us this week while Chad's been away.
It's been my pleasure. Thank you.
Bob Ortega is the managing editor of Civil Beat.
For the conversation comes from the HPR Local Talk Show Fund, which helps Hawaii Public Radio sustain and grow its locally produced talk show programming. Mahalo to contributors Bush Consulting and Sacred Hearts Academy.
Good morning at 8:29. You're tuned to The Conversation on statewide member-supported HPR2, Hawaii Public Radio. I'm Chris Vandercook. If you want to be in touch with us, there are a number of options for you, one of them being our talkback line at 808-792-8217, another being Facebook, where we're at Hawaii Conversation. On Twitter, you can find us at HI Conversation or at BKOZHPR. If you'd like to email us with a backyard quiz or anything else, comments on the show, reach us at talkback@hawaiipublicradio.org. Coming up, Maui resident Dick Meyer wraps up the Renovating Maui series, and later, a day to celebrate the quest for peace.
Next time in Studio 360, in her stand-up act and new Netflix show, the comedian Maria Bamford talks a lot about her own mental wobbliness.
You ever have like a dark thought, like a really dark thought, like, what if I licked a urinal? Oh my God, why did I even think of that? What if I'm a urinal licker?
How to make comedy out of your darkest moments. That's next time in Studio 360 from PRI and WNYC.
This afternoon at 4.
This being a Friday, one of the things we do is take a look at what our news department is working on for the coming week. And to help us with that, news director Bill Dorman joins us now. We got a lot going on. Last part of the Myth podcast will be happening next week.
We do. We're continuing the series of reports and longer podcasts available at hawaiipublicradio.org and on iTunes. We'll be putting out our fourth episode and the end of the current series, actually, next week on Hawaii's new ice age, crystal meth in the islands. Episode 4, we're calling Who's Got a Better Idea? And the idea of the piece is a forward-looking examination, really, of some of what is working, what can work better to deal with this ongoing crisis. In some areas, it seems to, again, be accepted just as, shoulder shrug, part of life in the islands. We just have to deal with this. But there are others who have some ideas to push this forward and are taking action on this and not being immobilized by that. So we'll take a look at some of that.
Good. And to understand that there are real costs to all of this and they're not just money.
And consequences, absolutely. Yeah, no question.
Political life is heating up. We've got someone new into the mayoral race.
It is. You know, the national race is going into a new phase and shifting gears here in Hawaii. Filing deadlines passed, and so some things are shaping up. Wayne Yoshioka is going to be taking a closer look at the Honolulu mayoral race next week. Top three candidates looking to be, of course, the mayor, Kirk Caldwell, former mayor, Peter Carlisle,
and
former
now
Congressman Charles DeJoux. And, of course, everybody also has other former titles, lots of experience in government.
That's
and elsewhere.
That's Hawaii in many cases. We just have things switch around a bit.
Exactly. And as you know, the way this works, August 13th in the primary, if someone gets 50% plus one of the vote, then that's over. That person wins. Otherwise, sets up a runoff between the top two vote-getters in the fall. And so we'll take a look at the top three candidates, although also I must say that over time, Wayne's going to look at some of the other candidates as well, because there are a lot of folks tossing hats in rings.
Yeah, we're going right down the ticket. What about arts and culture? What's going on?
Photography this week, next week, Ed Grevy, a familiar name to listeners who have been watching social issues in the islands over time. photographs, documented events here since the 60s, Save Our Surf Movement, Protecting the Coastlines. Got a show at the Lama Library at Kapi'olani Community College, and Noe Tanigawa talking to him about his work, his show, and a lot of other things.
Community advocacy and a lot of photos to document it.
Exactly.
Good. We'll look forward to it. Thanks so much.
You bet.
Bill Dorman joins us every Friday with a look at what's coming out of our news department. He's HPR's news director.
Got a box full of letters. Think you might like to read. Some things that you might like to see, but they're all addressed to me.
Also on a Friday, it's our custom to read your letters and emails. And this week on Facebook, Maui resident Rose Darling shared this. Thank you for covering some of the cataclysmic and imploding issues happening on Maui on your radio show today. Between the impending closure of HCNS, 700 will be out of work. The conversion of the McKenna Resort to a private condominium club, 300 or so will be out of work. The uncertainty in regards to the Kaiser takeover of Maui Memorial, the closing of Sports Authority, dozens to lose their jobs, and infinite other factors adversely affecting our community. It feels like there's a lot more unemployed people. There's going to be a lot more unemployed people and even less union jobs. Plus, the continued violation by visitors of approaching and touching our federally protected and endangered Hawaiian green sea turtles, along with other species. We need some serious help. Too bad our Uncle Dan Inouye is no longer around. Times like now, we really need him.
After last night's town square on Hawaiian language immersion schools, this arrived. As usual, great show. It's no great leap of imagination to guess that language immersion is required in Utah because of the LDS's required missionary activity. Note your speaker's hesitation when she was explaining about the reason for the man's residence in China. Still, they've been at it for quite a while. They should be very good at it, so we could probably learn much from them. And it's too bad it isn't standard in our elementary schools. That time would be better spent in elementary school than in high school. Wendy Arbeit. Thanks for the letters. If you have something to say, call our talkback line at 808-792-8217 or email us at talkback@hawaiipublicradio.org.
This week, we focused on how Maui is coping with change and, in many sectors, driving it. The snapshot we've seen is part of the continuum of real life for Maui resident and former economics and geography professor Dick Mayer. For much of his 49 years on Maui, he's helped to plan its future, and he'll be the first to say that things have not exactly gone as planned. We thought we'd give him the last word. Dick Mayer, welcome back to the show.
Thank you very much, Bethann. Good morning.
Good morning. As you've heard all the slices of conversation over this last week, has it really represented what you see on Maui?
That's part of it only. It's been a very good section of things that are changing on Maui, but there are so many other things that we didn't have time to cover this week. So
what's on your list?
The Maui Electric Company and the whole electricity industry of the state is pending on the decision by the PUC whether NextEra takes over. But in addition to the decision that PUC is making, Maui County itself has commissioned a study to see whether Maui County or whether the county government or some other entity should take over the Maui Electric Company and operate it totally independently of a statewide company. That decision will probably evolve out of whatever the PUC decides with NextEra. In addition, we have the cable news network and cable system in the state being taken over. Time Warner's losing its franchise. A new company's coming in, and it's rather uncertain as to exactly how Charter, the new company, they're calling it Spectrum, is going to modify things. They say they're going to go all digital. We're not sure how it's going to affect our local public access channel, Akaku, over here. And so that creates some real uncertainties. And, of course, the whole question of water. When we talk about HCNS going out, We're talking about usually about land, but the bigger issue actually is actually water, because that will decide much of the future of Maui. Who will get the water? Who will have control over the water? And whether the farming in East Maui will be able to be increased in Taro and other areas out there, and then who will get the water in Central Maui, and will the water be shipped around the island?
No, I was going to ask you, as you look at Maui and some of the issues that you just outlined, do you see Maui acting in as sort of one community or being increasingly more fractionalized?
That's interesting. My experience over the last many, many decades is that when I first arrived here 49 years ago, everybody thought of Maui as their home, the whole island. And as the population has grown and as the islands become more complex, many people now look at their own particular area on the island as their kuleana and are not even concerned about the other side of the island, so to speak. When their hearings were held in the past, anything happening on the island, people from all over the island came out and testified. Now what you see happening is that people only from that area, directly affected by whatever proposals being made, will come out and testify. And I think people have become more narrow in the areas that they're looking at.
And how has that affected politics?
Well, certainly one area is the need by some people feel to have district representation. Right now, the county council, there's a residency requirement as to where you live on the island for the members of the council. But people all over the island, all over the county for that matter, elect all of the council members. There are some who say we should have district voting, where each area of the island will be able to elect a representative who will really represent them rather than being beholden to the whole island. And that's a political change. And people from Molokai, Lanai, East Maui have resisted this because they would lose their ability right now to have a representative necessarily for their areas.
And as you've seen, so much change in the overall population of Maui, with many more people moving to Maui, Maui being whiter than the other islands, looking at a Hispanic population there that's been growing. All of that, has that also played into the idea of who governs Maui, locals, newcomers?
I think very much so. We saw the first real manifestation of that in the last election with the GMO issue, where we had the initiative to see whether Monsanto and the whole GMO industry should be curtailed or at least put on hold until we can find out if it's healthy. And I think it was many of the newcomers who voted for that moratorium to take place. The courts will have to decide, and the decision is going to be next week when the federal court hears the case. But the impact of all the outsiders coming in, I think, has been dramatic. It's not just outsiders. There are many local people also voted for it, but I think the newcomers carried the initiative and got the motivation behind it all. So there is a changing political structure. It'll be interesting to see in the next several elections whether the old guard, so to speak, is diminished in their power and new people come in.
As you look at Maui in, say, 5, 10, 20 years, what are the things that greatly concern you, perhaps, that we haven't even touched on yet?
Certainly the ability of local families to be able to stay on the island. When I first came here, the big question was jobs. Everybody was concerned. At that time, the plantations were mechanizing. There were very few jobs. Almost the entire high school class of, let's say, 1959 or 1963 had to leave the island because there were no jobs here. The plantations were becoming mechanized. Now the question is not jobs, but rather housing. And a young family here, a young person growing up here, would like to be able to stay here, raise a family here, and now they can't afford to be here. So many of them are having to leave. If their parents are able to give them a piece of land or give them a house, fine. But that isn't usually the case. And so I think that will change greatly. And that also changes the political balance, because as young people leave, what we have is rich mainland people, and I think in the future probably even rich Chinese and perhaps others, Canadians, Alaskans, coming in here and being able to buy homes. The tourist industry, I think, counts the number of visitors that come to the island, but what it misses is that there are so many people who aren't considered tourists because they own a home on Maui, but they come here for 3 months, 4 months a year, either live in a condo or have their own second home here, And that adds to the number of outsiders actually on the island and in some cases even voting on the island.
When we talked a little earlier this morning with Albert Perez from Maui Tomorrow Foundation, and he was talking about, you know, we have to look at what the island of Maui can really support in terms of people looking through the environmental lens. Using both that lens and economics, what do you see might be a feasible situation to not cap it because you can't stop people from coming, but how do you mitigate that in some way?
Well, I think the threats are considerable, and one that is the rising sea levels all around the island. You know, the tourist industry has become our major industry on the island, but it's being threatened because many of the beaches now are eroding away. Many of the condos that were built along the shoreline, finding that they're having to build seawalls, and it's not quite sure whether those seawalls are going to actually help. They may protect the building temporarily, but it may affect other tourist areas down the coast. So our tourist industry could really be subject to some significant changes. And coupled with that is, of course, the fact that we've had decreasing rainfall over the past decades on Maui, and so areas that may have been lush and green in the past may not be quite so lush and green, not to mention, I said not to forget that HCNS going out of production is going to mean that the green central Maui may evolve into some other pattern. So there's some real threats to the tourist industry, our bread and butter industry. The one industry that I think you haven't really talked a lot about that may increase is taking care of the elderly. There are a lot of rich people in Sunnyvale and the hotel industry movie industry and other celebrities, and in Silicon Valley, who will be able to move to Maui, afford to be here, mm-hmm. and it may become an industry to take care of them, which could be a very profitable industry, actually, elder care.
Dick, we've got to go, but thanks very much for the snapshot based on everything you've known from living on Maui for 49 years.
Thank
we
you,
appreciate
thank
your
you
time.
Very much for looking at Maui's issues.
Pleasure. Dick Mayer has lived on Maui for almost five decades and has been very active in environmental issues and in Maui efforts to plan its future. He taught economics and geography at Maui Community College and now coordinates the Alliance of Maui Community Associations. And just a note, all the conversations about Maui are now in a podcast, Remodeling Maui. It's on our website, hawaiipublicradio.org.
Aloha, I'm Gil Riviere. You're tuned to HPR2, Hawaii Public Radio. Continue the conversation with us by following us on Twitter. Our handle is @HIConversation.
Today in the Backyard Quiz, we asked you for the name of the irrigation system HCNS built to water its vast sugarcane fields. Completed in 1878, the system initially covered 17 miles and was comprised of tunnels, ditches, siphons, flumes, and reservoirs. It provided 60 million gallons of water per day to over 3,000 acres of sugarcane fields. At the time of its construction, it was an engineering marvel that served as a guide for irrigation and water reclamation procedures used around in projects across the mainland United States. Alexander and Baldwin's oldest subsidiary, East Maui Irrigation Company, traces its lineage directly from this project. The system has been lengthened and its capacity increased from the original design, which was known as the Hamakua Ditch.
And Ron McDonald called us from Kauai, knew the answer, and we'll be receiving a T-shirt. And thanks for listening every morning. We appreciate it. It's now 8:15. That's today's Backyard Quiz. If you've got one, send it to us at talkback@hawaiipublicradio.org.
Japanese people know the cost of war. Their country has seen war from the perspective of both the victor and the vanquished. The upcoming Bridge of Peace Festival in the Huaikoei has a broad-based celebration of Japanese culture that asks us to rededicate ourselves to the cost of peace and to keep the memory of Hiroshima alive. Nicole Sakurai of the Happiness Planting Center is on the line to tell us more. Good morning, Nicole.
Hi, good morning.
This is, for the most part, this is a festival, but it's also it's important to have a Hiroshima memorial as part of this, yeah?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Following President Obama's historical visit to Hiroshima, Japan.
Yes.
So we thought it's going to be a wonderful opportunity to share exhibits to Hiroshima from Hiroshima Peace Memorial Museum, all the art poster materials coming to the Kauai. So I made a connection with Hiroshima Peace Memorial Museum. So community people be able to see a same material from Hiroshima as well.
Nicole, what's your impression of how the people of Japan reacted to the president's visit?
Oh, we are so happy, the Japanese people. And many people are tears and felt so warm feeling, especially when we were listening, his speech was so wonderful, extended to not only Japanese, and I believe all the people in the world.
Well, so it really did have an impact, yeah?
Yes, very positively impacted, yes.
How do you carry that kind of feeling forward? I mean, it's, you know, obviously it's a shared goal of all the peoples of the world, but how are we going to get there?
How are we going to get there? It's like many people, I believe, know about Atmajam, but not exactly understanding what's happening in Japan back then.
Mm-hmm.
And also, there's not much opportunity we had sharing the feelings. So last year, I had same partial exhibit at Kauai, actually, at the Veteran Center.
Uh-huh.
And I met many Kauai people had more compassion about the war and atomic bomb and our history. So I thought it's going to be a great time for we can more open, raise awareness.
Sure.
At the community level, yes.
At the same time, you also have at your upcoming festival a great many different ways of celebrating Japan's culture in other ways, yeah?
Yes. So we have many entertainment and also Japanese food and game. And so I thought not just presenting art and entertainment. So I thought we can connect everything and also bringing more education opportunity to people as well. So we have Japanese green tea ceremony from 11 and 1, and also mochi pounding from 10:30. And we have a taiko drum singing and more like a hula dance from noon. So it's from 9 to 3 p.m., we have whole great packages.
Nicole, for you, the Happiness Planting Center is year-round, right?
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm.
What is it that you do there?
What I do up there?
Well, what does the center do?
Center, we offer meditation and anger management, and also we offer class, like a flower arrangement and healing seminar, Reiki. So we all are helping people needed and connected from yours to the elder. So this is about Happiness Planting Center. Yes.
How many people come through your center over the course of a year, do you think?
From a small class to the big event. So last year, we had over 100 people for the event. And daily classes, about 15, the small class to the medium class. It depends on what kind of class we offer.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
But you're having an impact on your community is what it sounds like.
Oh, yes, yes, yes. And, yeah, you know, we met many people who love Japanese culture.
Uh-huh.
And also I like to share Hawaiian culture because we have visitors coming too. So next week we have a fla dancer. She's very famous and loads working tables. So she's going to offer a beautiful fla dance and music.
Well, Nicole, I wish you luck with the festival, and I hope you get more people every year. Thank you very much for talking with us.
Oh, thank you so much.
My pleasure.
Please come to join us. Thank you.
All right. Bye-bye. Nicole Sakurai is an organizer of the Bridge of Peace Festival, fifth happiness planting Japanese cultural event on June 18th from 9 till 3 p.m. in Lihue at the Happiness Planting Center behind Eisenberg Park. You can find out more on our Hawaii Conversation Facebook page.
Intelligence Squared U.S., where the world's leading thinkers debate today's most critical issues. The motion up for debate: containment is not enough. ISIS must be defeated.
Can you and are you willing to send in hundreds of thousands of troops?
Can we at least just try a proper strategy of advice and support?
That's all coming up on Intelligence Squared U.S.
Monday evening at 7, following Humankind.
Beth Ann, I think we've learned a lot from your series on Maui this week. And, you know, it's kind of the premise of our show that if you want to find out something, ask somebody, right?
Well, we try. And certainly, as you heard Dick Mayer say, there's so much more to talk about. And we're going to take up some of those issues in the future. You can be sure of that part, especially about what it might mean for the healthcare industry in having people who are moving to Maui who are going to need help at home.
Yeah.
But for the moment, we need to say goodbye because it's a Friday. And, you know, a lot of the time we hear from Native Hawaiians opposed to the TMT. Next week, we're going to talk with the group which supports it and the motion to intervene in the contested case currently underway. Plus, social scientist and the director of the UH Public Policy Center, Colin Moore, gives us his take on the GOP and Democratic Party splits and the dropout factor.
And looking ahead to the Aloha International Piano Festival. Meanwhile, if you want to make some sounds in our direction, you can call our talkback line and leave us your comments. The number is 808-792-8217. Email is talkback at hawaiipublicradio.org.
If you've ever wondered about the music that you hear, you can find it all on hawaiipublicradio.org, where you can listen back to today's show.
Our executive producer is Beth Ann Kozovich. Lillian Song produces the program. Ryan Finnerty and Russell Subiono are our production assistants.
And the backyard theme was written for us by John DeMello.
I'm Chris Vandercook.
I'm Beth Ann Kozovich. Come back Monday for more of The Conversation.